75 years ago, radios across America crackled to the sound of this ominous revelation.
We know now that in the early years of the 20th century, this world was being watched closely by intelligences greater than man's, and yet as mortal as his own.
With those words, actor and director Orson Welles led the nation through a chilling tale of a Martian invasion of Earth. And with more on this memorable anniversary, we're joined by WKAR's Kevin Lavery. Hey, Kevin.
Good morning, Mark. It's a pleasure to be here.
What do you have for us here?
Well, the radio broadcast, of course, was just a story. But the War of the Worlds on October 30th, 1938, set off a wave of panic across the country and became an American cultural touchstone. Now, Mark, there is a new connection to this old legend. Brad Schwartz is a 2008 graduate of Okemos High School and of the University of Michigan. He is a credited co-writer in an upcoming documentary on the War of the Worlds that we are airing tomorrow night at 9 o'clock on WKAR-TV. He studied hundreds of letters to Orson Welles that conveyed the surge of emotions felt by millions of people on that memorable night. I first asked Brad about his passion for the golden age of radio.
My parents, when I was growing up, always had a hard time getting me to sleep at night, so they would get me these cassettes of shows like The Shadow or the Mercury Theater on the Air. So I'd heard all these, and I knew the voice of Orson Welles as a young person. You know, who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men?
The Shadow knows.
You know, I remember that very well.
By the time you got to high school here in this area, Okemos High School, you started honing in on the War of the Worlds as a class project. Tell me a bit about that and how that also continued once you got to college, too.
Yeah. I had a teacher in high school in ninth grade, Mr. Matt Morrison, who I had for U.S. history. And we did kind of the history version of a science fair. I was part of the unit on the 1930s, so somebody did a project on Franklin Roosevelt. Somebody did, you know, John Dillinger. And I ended up with Orson Welles and the War of the Worlds. So in addition to a poster board, I had a microphone set up and a music stand so my fellow students could reenact portions of the broadcast. When I got to the University of Michigan and I was studying, I was double majoring in history and film, what they call screen arts and culture, I discovered in my junior year, thanks to a friend who works in the library, whose name is Phil Hallman, that the U of M has these two massive collections of Orson Welles' personal papers donated by some of his associates. They were very new then. They'd only just been donated in 07, and few people had really gone through them. And I heard that among these collections were about 1,400 letters that he had received, and he and the Mercury Theater had received, from people who heard the War of the Worlds in 1938. And nobody had gone through them since that event. You know, this would have been nearly 75 years ago when I discovered it, 75 years ago now. And so I thought, what a great treasure trove of material that's right up my alley. And as luck would have it, I was just beginning the process at Michigan to do a history thesis. And I needed a topic, and the professor I had at the time said, why don't you look into this a little more? There's your project. And we were off and running.
So from that, you eventually decided to take a leap and reach out to public television, specifically to the staff of the PBS show American Experience. How did that unfold?
Well, they reached out to me. It's kind of a funny story. So I wrote this thesis that is the second longest in the history of the University of Michigan, using these letters and about 600 others that were at the National Archives that had been written to the FCC. To kind of analyze the response to the broadcast in a way that hadn't yet been possible. And that summer, I needed a summer job because I still had a term of college to do. And so I applied for an internship at American Experience in Boston, an internship I couldn't end up taking. But as part of the application, I sent them a few pages from the thesis. And they, as luck would have it, the executive producer, Mark Sammels, is a tremendous Orson Welles fan. He knew the 75th anniversary was coming up, and he really wanted to do a show. And I just happened to come through the door with new material that nobody else had used right when they were beginning to develop the show. So they, instead of giving me an internship, they gave me a job co-writing the show.
Very serendipitous.
I know.
Let's listen to some clips from that classic broadcast, The War of the Worlds. This was on Mischief Night, October 30th, 1938, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Millions of people across the country are listening. If you're lucky enough to live on the West Coast, maybe you've got a little bit of daylight left, but it is pitch black on the East Coast, including the area around Princeton, New Jersey, which is where this fictitious Martian invasion takes place. The broadcast starts off pretty normally. It starts with a weather forecast, and then there's some ballroom music from New York City.
Ladies and gentlemen, we interrupt our program of dance music to bring you a special bulletin from the Intercontinental Radio News. At 20 minutes before 8 Central Time, Professor Farrell of the Mount Jennings Observatory, Chicago, Illinois, reports observing several explosions of incandescent gas occurring at regular intervals on the planet Mars. The spectroscope indicates the gas to be hydrogen and moving toward the Earth with enormous velocity. Professor Pearson of the observatory at Princeton confirms Farrell's observation and describes the phenomenon as, quote, like a jet of blue flame shot from a gun, unquote. We now return you to the music of Ramon Raquello, playing for you in the Meridian Room of the Park Plaza Hotel, situated in downtown New York.
So this is the age before wall-to-wall news coverage, way before CNN. They just go right back to the music after this startling announcement, almost like it never even happened.
Yeah, and that was, I mean, if you've, like I have, if you've listened to a lot of news broadcasts from the day, that was, this sounds exactly like what they would have done. Oftentimes they used piano music as filler before they had more information. Now they just keep talking. But so this was a very close copy of what a news broadcast of the day sounded like.
Later on in the broadcast, we hear from a reporter named Carl Phillips. He's now on the scene in Grover's Mill, New Jersey. He's at the site of a farm where this mysterious object has crashed, and things are heating up now at Grover's Mill.
Wait a minute, something's happening. Humped shape is rising out of the pit. I can make out a small beam of light against a mirror. What's that? There's a jet of flame springing from the mirror and it leaps right at the advancing men. It strikes them head on. Lord, they're turning into flames. Now the whole field's caught up by the woods, the fires, the gas tanks of the automobiles spreading everywhere. It's coming this way now, about 20 yards to my right.
Ladies and gentlemen, due to circumstances beyond our control, we are unable to continue the broadcast from Grover's Mill. Evidently, there's some difficulty with our field transmission.
That's a really key part in the show, and that's a moment when you read in the letters a lot of the people who were frightened. That's either when they tuned in or when they were convinced that this was real, because it sounds so realistic.
What were some of the things people said about this?
Sure. Well, yeah, these are a couple of the letters that are dramatized as actors in the show. Let me read one. This is from Sunland, California, and it was written November 1st, 1938. Dear Mr. Wells, really, kerham kerump, you delivered the 100% imaginative bang of any century last evening. Took a minute for the tubes to warm up, then over the air came the following. Something wrong. A musical interlude will follow until communication is reestablished. The organ no sooner got underway than it was cut off, and the following came filtering through. The cylinder lies in a deep crater. No signs of life is evident.
The battle which took place tonight at Grover Mills has ended in one of the most startling defeats ever suffered by an army in modern times. 7,000 men armed with rifles and machine guns pitted against a single fighting machine of the invaders from Mars. 120 known survivors. The rest strewn over the battle area from Grover's Mill to Plainsboro, crushed and trampled to death under the metal feet of the monster, or burned to cinders by its heat ray.
People in the streets see it now. They're running toward the East River, thousands of them, dropping in like rats.
And as the radio drowned out calamity, catastrophe, and chaos, we increased our appearance of bug-eyedy, and our jaws sagged lower and lower. Well, all I can say is, Mr. Wells, that you have undoubtedly made the shades of Keene, Booth, Mantell, and all others once great crazy with rage, and had best stick around here until they cool down. Go to it, and more power to you. I'll be listening, just you bet. And be on at 5 sharp hereafter. Congratulations. I am sincerely yours, Seymour Charles Hayden.
Bug-eyedy.
Bug-eyedy, exactly. That's what made this such a fun project to do my thesis on, because, you know, every one of these letters has a very unique voice and oftentimes a very unique vocabulary, as you could tell. I mean, it's when you read that, it's like you can hear this fellow talking. And so to see this letter and several others come to life in this American Experience show has been really unique.
It just doesn't come across the same way on Twitter, does it?
No, not at all. But these are very much the Twitter and Facebook of their day, because in 1938, this is the only way you had to reach out to a broadcaster or anybody. So this is how people registered their opinions in much the same way they do now.
Finally, at the end of the broadcast, Orson Welles comes out of character. Here comes this 23-year-old whiz kid, the mastermind at CBS Mercury Radio Theater, to basically say April Fool's about 7 months late, although it does coincide, of course, nicely with another holiday that's coming up. And here's what Orson Welles has to say to America after this tremendous scare.
This is Orson Welles, ladies and gentlemen. Out of character, to assure you that the War of the Worlds has no further significance than as the holiday offering it was intended to be. The Mercury Theater's own radio version of dressing up in a sheet and jumping out of a bush and saying boo. Starting now, we couldn't soap all your windows and steal all your garden gates by tomorrow night, so we did the best next thing. We annihilated the world before your very ears and utterly destroyed the CBS. You will be relieved, I hope, to learn that we didn't mean it, and that both institutions are still open for business. So goodbye, everybody, and remember, please, for the next day or so, the terrible lesson you learned tonight. That grinning, glowing, globular invader of your living room is an inhabitant of the pumpkin patch, and if your doorbell rings and nobody's there, that was no Martian. It's Halloween.
You're 23, the same age Orson Welles was, and now yes. You have a co-writing credit in this documentary. That's got to be overwhelmingly amazing. You must be standing on Orson Welles' shoulders.
Absolutely. It's fun to have my own War of the Worlds broadcast at that age. You know, it's a wonderful professional distinction to have at the beginning of my career. I also wrote a student film at Michigan that premiered in Traverse City. At the Traverse City Film Festival this past summer. Just so to have two projects that I worked on as a writer premiere in the same year at this age, I'm feeling very fortunate to have that.
Brad Schwartz is an Okemos High School and University of Michigan alum. He helped co-write the upcoming PBS American Experience documentary on the 75th anniversary of the War of the Worlds. It airs tomorrow night at 9 on WKAR-TV. Brad, it has been absolutely wonderful sharing this classic story with you. Thank you and happy Halloween.
And happy Halloween to you as well.
For Current State, I'm Kevin Lavery.
Tonight, the Columbia Broadcasting System and its affiliated stations coast to coast has brought you The War of the Worlds by H.G. Wells, the 17th in its weekly series of dramatic broadcasts featuring Orson Welles and the Mercury Theater on the air. Next week, we present a dramatization of three famous short stories. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.